Welcome to Project Zion Podcast. My name is Susan Oxley. I'll be your host today for this episode of Climate Brewing, the Zion podcast series that deals with the causes and effects of our climate change and the climate emergency that we find ourselves in today. Now, this podcast is being recorded in Seattle, Washington, where I'm Zooming with my good friend Paul Bethel from California. Thanks to Zoom, we can get together. Paul and I are both members of the North American Climate Justice Team. A few weeks ago, we attended the 2025 World Conference of Community of Christ, a historic moment in our history with the ordination of our first woman prophet president of the church, Stacy Cram. The Holy Spirit moved throughout the week as we affirmed her leadership, ordained six new young apostles, and ordained the first French Polynesian presiding evangelist, Mareva Arnaud. In addition to the expanding diversity among the leadership of the church, this conference was a historic moment in other ways. The body of delegates passed three climate resolutions. I've invited Paul to share his perspectives about the resolution G5 that called for a just transition away from fossil fuels, divestment from the fossil fuel industry, and movement toward a fossil fuel proliferation treaty. Paul, thank you for joining me today. I always enjoy sharing with you.
Well, thank you for having me, Susan. It's always fun to do these.
Yes, it is. So let's get right to it. How did you feel about the reception of G5 at World Conference?
Well, of course, I was encouraged that it was adopted by the conference with minimal revision.
Yeah.
And it was good to see that it had, you know, strong enough support that it passed by a handsome majority.
Yes.
Another thing I noticed that, you know, my impression has always been that the Council of 12 Apostles usually remain, you know, they stay sort of neutral during votes on issues that are brought before the conference. And I was a bit surprised and enthused to see that nearly all of the 12 raised their hands in support during the vote on G5. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but I don't think I've ever seen the apostles raising their hand in support like that before on anything.
Well, I have. In my experience as an apostle, but it doesn't happen very often. The apostles are aware that people watch them and they try not to influence the body too much, but sometimes when they feel strongly about an issue, they will vote their preferences. And it was wonderful to see how much support there was during the vote on G5.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how many people noticed that, but I certainly did. You know, our climate justice team over the years, you know, we've really had amazing support from both the first presidency as well as the presiding bishopric. In fact, on Tuesday, the day that the G5 resolution was scheduled to come to the floor, the entire bishopric up on the dais, they were wearing our Climate Action is a Faith Thing t-shirts.
Yes.
So I saw that as an act of strong support as well as an inspired fashion statement, in my opinion. And, you know, there appears to be pretty good evidence that the new first presidency is also very supportive, is also very aware of and deeply concerned about climate issues. So it was good to see such a positive show of support from the 12 as well. So there are three resolutions that reference climate at this conference, and all three were approved by the church. And I was really enthused to see the standing World Church Human Rights Team submit a resolution concerning climate change.
Yes, I was too.
Because, you know, similar to the military and NATO considering climate change as a threat multiplier, you know, I kind of think that climate change is an inhibitor of just about every aspect of our church initiatives. And the Human Rights Team's resolution kind of confirms that they're aware of this as well.
Can you give us some examples of that as a little bit?
Well, the degradation of the climate impacts, the least of these. It's the poorest people who are impacted the most. It's the people who have done the least to contribute to climate change who suffer the greatest.
Right.
Climate change is a human rights inhibitor. It inhibits peace, justice, health, inclusivity. It's beyond just a practical issue. Climate change is also a social issue, and we need to admit that by definition, it's also a theological issue as well.
Yes.
And I think the most exciting thing is that these resolutions, just, in my opinion, it's given us permission to admit that climate action is a faith thing. We don't need to worry anymore that it's inappropriate to preach about climate change from the pulpit. We should be. These resolutions confirm that, caring for God's sacred creation it's not just a catchphrase, but it can be an action statement. We can actually do things about this.
Yes, I think that's very encouraging. But there were a few comments in opposition. I know that you're aware of those. What would you like to say to those people?
Well, I heard reports from some of the caucuses, as well as some comments during debate on the conference floor. I would love to get a chance to discuss these, but they're the people that claim that climate change isn't real, that there's not a whole lot I feel we can say to them. The increases in severity and frequency of extreme weather events they're just overwhelmingly obvious. So other than maybe giving examples of all these climate disasters that are happening all at once that maybe they're not aware of, I don't know that there's a whole lot more that can be said.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel the same way.
But some of the comments are a mystery. One caucus evidently devoted a significant amount of time to make the point that not everyone can afford to purchase an electric vehicle. And the resolution didn't mention electric vehicles. Nothing in the resolution implied anyone had to go out and buy an electric vehicle. The resolution said we have to stop the expansion of fossil fuels. Not turn it off right away, but to stop expanding, stop growing, and then work to reduce it. So it's not shut off the spigot right away, it's stop adding spigots.
Good
Then
analogy.
it emphasizes that we need to focus our attention on renewables. Focus our investment, focus our attention, our research on renewables, something that is sustainable, that doesn't destroy the planet. The other thing is to divest from fossil fuel investment, which is not only money, but to take away the social license, the acceptability of burning things to power ourselves. And then the other thing was to address or join with people who are trying to get a binding non-proliferation treaty to stop the expansion of fossil fuels. So I'm not sure where the electric vehicle thing came from. And there were some other comments I think that were more valid. For example, there's concern about the disruption that mining will cause. And we have to mine for minerals for solar panels or lithium for batteries. It's not a free lunch. There's disruption, there's contamination, pollution from the mining. And there are some stories about indigenous groups here and there that are protesting these mines on their properties. So we do need better policies to restrict mining in places that need to be protected. We have to be aware that the amount of mineral mining for panels or lithium mining needed for batteries is much, 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 much less than the environmental and social destruction currently being caused by energy mining for coal, oil, and gas. By comparison, the disruption of going renewable is minuscule compared to the existing degradation caused by the fossil fuel industry. So, this is a valid concern, but it's really not as critical when you weigh it against the existing disruption.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't think of it in that way. They don't compare the damage, the disruption, the danger to our environment that is being caused by the fossil fuel industry compared to the, as you say, minuscule mining and disruption that will continue to be caused as we shift to fossil away from fossil fuels to renewables.
I think I remember one comment mentioned that the thousands of solar panels being installed today, and the warning was that these panels will be choking landfills in 20 years when their service life is over. And that's a valid concern. But I think it fails to take into account that currently, right now, roughly 75 to 80% of solar panels products are recyclable. Not that they are being recycled now, but they are recyclable. So I would predict as more and more solar panels exceed their useful, life cycle, there's going to be more and more recycling coming online. And in 20 years, I suspect that the 80% that we have now will creep higher and higher. So, concern about what to do with solar panels is not as critical as one might think. So, those are the ones that I remember, Susan. I don't know if you remember any other issues that were brought up.
Yes, Paul, in conversation with other people prior to the vote on G5, there were several other issues that people brought up to me as concerns. One is the economics of it. Some people are concerned about loss of income if the World Church does change its investments in an attempt to divest from fossil fuels. What they don't understand is that it's already happening, that years ago, like 10 or 15 years ago, the World Church began asking their investment committee to move toward greener investments. They've already divested from weapons and drug-related, violent-related investments, and they started the movement toward green investments a number of years ago, and we've made progress in that. It's already happening, and there's been excellent returns on our investments, not a decrease in what the World Church investments have been bringing us. So it can be done. The biggest problem with divestment is the time it takes to make the switch. Takes a lot of research, takes a lot of time, and it takes all the paperwork and bureaucracy to do it. If you start small by changing your credit card from a bank that is very invested in fossil fuels to one that's not, or to a completely green credit card, that can be done. You can change your banks. Takes a lot of work and a research, but you can do that. You can change your insurance, you can change investments. But it takes time and energy, and people need to be willing to make that time commitment. There's a lot of diverse needs around the globe, and these resolutions need to be adapted to local needs and concerns. So those are just some of the comments I heard and some of my reflections about those. But passing G5 was only the start of the journey. What do you see are the next steps for the World Church or for mission centers?
From many of the concerns that were brought up at conference, we can tell that there's a lot of people who simply have not had the opportunity to learn much about this, climate emergency. Many of the strong concerns come from, decades-old paradigms,
That's
some
true.
from, outdated information, some from outdated technology, and some from, propaganda that's propped up an unsustainable energy outlook.
Yeah, that's true.
And the church can create materials and programs and study guides, but it's kind of like that lead a horse to water scenario. I know that the Earth Stewardship Team put together several study guides several years ago, and I'm not sure that those were very widely utilized. But changes to our climate and changes to technology, they're coming so quickly now. Materials that were prepared even 2 or 3 years ago, they're obsolete now. The technology has moved drastically, the dangers are more pronounced, and the solutions are more varied. I would love to see us implement some way that we could coordinate or communicate across mission centers, somehow synchronize efforts across fields, at least in the USA field. I know that there were some questions asked about, how do we do solar on our church buildings? And there are some congregations that have installed solar panels. There are some that have put in battery, power backups. I know for sure that there's some in Michigan, and there's some that have installed heat pumps, but we don't disseminate that information very well. We don't share best practices from one area to another. And not that everyone has to implement it, but it'd be nice to know that the knowledge is out there within the church. We just need to be able to share it better.
So, Paul, one of the things that the North American Climate Justice Team that we belong to is doing now is establishing a Facebook page. And I'm wondering if that might help a little bit with this cross-jurisdictional communication if people start using and making practical a Facebook page like the one we've got.
That would be amazing. It's just now launching, so if the people that we can't reach through our webinars, maybe we can reach and interact with on our Facebook page, and maybe that could be like a clearinghouse where people, even if they're not members of our team or not involved with our webinars, could still go and reference or be notified when things are happening.
Or provide links to information that they have and solutions that they've implemented that could be a model for others.
We'll see what how that develops. That would be, I think,
That's a vision
exciting.
for the future. So when we talk about one of the issues in that resolution, divesting from fossil fuels, what do you see are the main barriers that keep us from doing that?
Well, I think one of the first things that we have to realize is the amount of funds that are being funneled to subsidize fossil fuels. That amount of money, it's staggering, and this is worldwide. I think the 20 I think it was estimated something like $7 trillion was funneled to subsidize the oil industry in 2023, I believe.
Wow.
The UN estimates they only need 40 billion to feed all the hungry people in the world. So it's a huge amount of money. But beyond that, I think the biggest hurdle is that we just can't envision doing anything different from what we are currently doing. We haven't really been exposed to alternative options, alternative social structures, alternative economic structures.
Yeah, that's true.
It almost sounds like the same problem Jesus had, but I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
I think one step is the awareness that where our money is, our money can be our largest carbon footprint. Where and how our money is used and invested has a bigger impact on our carbon footprint than the car we drive, or how we heat our homes, or what type of light bulbs we use.
Yeah.
But I think more important, that divestment goes beyond just money, is we're giving tacit approval to a system that's destroying our planet. we give it a social license to burning oil for powers. And if we accept the status quo, that means we're giving our support. We are allowing acceptance of an energy system that's destroying our common home. So we have to take steps to make this extractive, exploitive energy structure, we have to make it socially unacceptable. We have to make it repugnant. Just like smoking or apartheid, we have to remove the social license, the social acceptance, the social approval. And when we do that, then we can see change happen. We need to make destruction of the environment socially unacceptable.
Well, I think that's a really important point that most people don't think about, how we accept and just figure it's natural to be in a fossil fuel economy. And we do give social license to that. Thank you for bringing that up, that we need to make it socially unacceptable. Is there anything else you would like to say as we get near the end of our podcast?
Well, I had several people ask me why this resolution now? What difference does it make? Our church is too small to make a difference. And I agree that we are a small denomination. But I also admit that simply doing nothing makes us an insignificant small denomination. And I don't feel that way. I don't think it has to be that way. When you take a small group that's of one heart and one mind, they have the power of community that, usually is simply forgotten, it's ignored. But if as a church, I speak from a USA or a North American perspective, but as a church, if we're able to track and share information about, policies and laws that are being considered, we could implement climate action. In the US, if, 5 or 10,000 members, if they called their elected representatives and told them, I don't want weaker water quality standards, or I want stronger pollution controls, I don't want to subsidize oil companies. I want you to vote yes on a single-use plastic ban, or I want you to vote no on the rollback of toxin controls. Pick any state or any province. If 1,000 of us called our representative, 2,000, 5,000, that would be huge. That would move the needle. We can make a difference. We just have to do it. And we have to get enough of us do it as a community, and we become a faith group that makes a difference. That's what I'd like to be.
I would like to be that too. And you shared that challenge very well. Thank you so much, Paul. I've really enjoyed our time together and exploring these ideas. And I look forward to another opportunity eventually in the future to do another podcast with you.
I'll await that eagerly myself.
All right.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
Thank you so much, Paul.